because we were like, fuck that. These icicles also belong to us. You know why? Because we are children of God, and this is God's school, and this is God's campus, which means this is also God's apartment complex, which means this is absolutely God's icicle, which means it belongs to everybody.
Amen.
It's more than a podcast. They're more than best friends. It's more than an hour of laughing and crying and then going back to laughing again. It's more than a podcast. They're more than ex-Mormon. It's the More Than Mormon podcast.
You know? Hello.
Hello. Welcome back to More Than Mormon. I'm Lena.
And I'm Meg, or, as some people call me, Hermana Quigley.
No.
I still get, I love getting, like, Facebook messages from, like, old women that I served on my mission that are like, Sister Quigley, it's so fun to see that your pictures you're posting. And I'm like, thank you so much. I'm an apostate, and I was drunk as hell in that picture, but thank you.
People still call me Sister Goldwater every once in a while.
I just literally like a week ago changed your name in my phone to from Angelina Goldwater to Lena Forsgren. But for years it's just been Angelina Goldwater, and I never call you Angelina, and I never call you Goldwater.
Nope.
Like, but I was just like, maybe it's time to change her name in my phone.
You're like, maybe the time has come.
The time is
several
now.
Years.
The day
we're like
has
approaching
arrived.
Our fifth anniversary, and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, that sounds about right. The day has we arrived.
I feel like we should explain that.
So
that's an inside joke from like
way back.
In our
way,
friendship.
Way back. We were roommates at BYU Idaho.
And we were recounting the tales of the first time that we got our periods as young women.
Yes. So my period was always irregular, and it would just kind of show up out of nowhere. And like the next day, Meg got her period, or it was like in that week, and she just like busts through the door. And she goes, I have to move my mic. Because I'm going to be loud. She busts through the door and she goes, the day has arrived!
Well, because we were talking about how every time you get your period, it feels like a victory. It's
yes.
Like, it's fucking here. We're fucking
yes,
in it.
Because you don't it want to be sucks. Pregnant, especially as a single gal at BYU Idaho. So,
yeah.
And then the when I had arrived. My birth control removed and I got my first period for the first time in like 11 years because my birth control
you
just like stopped
me.
It. I texted you.
You texted me in all caps. The day has arrived. And yep. I knew exactly what you meant. I needed no further exclamation. I was like, oh, she got her period. Congratulations.
Yep. So that is a fun little inside joke that we have let you in on. There is no TMI here on the More Than Mormon podcast, apparently.
Apparently.
Which
I mean,
actually kind
was,
of fits for all the things we're going to talk about, because this is a BYU Idaho part two, but we're also kind of talking about things that, you know, when you're setting boundaries, when you're a human, there's certain things that are normal and important, and within the spectrum, we're going to cover all of that today, so buckle up, my friends. Also, are we in the same outfits you saw us in the last time we uploaded? Yes. Did we
it's
sit
only
down
been 10 minutes.
And record two episodes in a row? Also, yes. So you're welcome. We look fabulous. I am still in the shirt that triggered Meg last episode.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you listening, yes. It
the
is
inspo
the
for the BYU Idaho
snuggle.
Episodes.
Yes, which is not what we planned to do when we sat down last time. We actually had a completely different episode lined up, but you know what? We go with the flow here. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, I was thinking about that during our intermission, during the 10 minutes in between recording, and I was like, wait, did you start recording?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you did. The second time. Okay. Like, has any of this been recorded? I was thinking about how earlier today we were texting about what we were going to talk about. We're like sending each other links and videos, and we were talking, we're like, save it for the podcast. And then we sat down and we like didn't even talk about a word of it because I got so focused on BYU Idaho because of your shirt. And so this is a BYU Idaho part two, and we are going to finish sort of talking about our experiences there, especially Lena's experience with leaving there.
Spoiler alert, we get distracted and we don't talk about any of that.
And I'm going to tell some tragic BYU Idaho dating stories, I think.
Nope, we run out of time and we also don't talk about that.
Definitely got some of those.
In the same sort of situation is this experience that happened to me this week. And we were like, we got to talk about this on the podcast.
This is what we talk about for the majority of this episode.
Because it's relevant to, I think, leaving the church and, like you said, trying to set boundaries, having expectations for what your relationships will look like post-faith and friendships and, like, those kind of things. And the reality is that, like, as much as I would love to just be like, have fun dating stories from BYU Idaho and, like, now I left the church and everything's fine. Like, the reality is that, like, there are a lot of people from school, from my mission, that I don't have a relationship with anymore. And it is because I left the church, and it is because of their reaction to me leaving and then my reaction to their reaction. It can be difficult to maintain those relationships, which is what makes thinking about college, thinking about my mission, I'm sure that you can relate to this too, like, thinking about those things, like, so bittersweet, because it's just... I loved it and I had so much fun and it was so weird and crazy and a big part of who I am. But then at the same time, you like try to move forward and be like a normal person who's just like talking to someone they went to school with or started their mission with. And then you get hit with this like, I am not the person that they think that I am. And they are not the person that I think that they are. And I don't know what that's going to look like going forward. And so this just happened to me. And so we wanted to bring it up on the pod.
Also, just a quick side note, do you remember the time our neighbors put a note on their door? Can we talk about this?
Wait. Are we talking about the icicles? Okay, yes. I was just, like, within the last 2 weeks, I was telling someone about the Great Icicle War of, it must have been, like, 2016.
I am sure we even still have a picture somewhere. I'll have to see if I can find it.
Do you want to tell that story?
So, just really quickly, because there's something you said that just, like, totally sparked that memory. Because I remember feeling very insecure and having it be bittersweet when I first came to BYU Idaho, because you were my roommate. You were the one who like helped me get housing, helped me sign up for my classes. You're like, hey, I don't have a roommate. Like, if you're cool sharing a room. And I was like, done. I've had a companion. That's not true. For the last 18 months. I actually had roommates.
Had roommates that I loved. And I was like, guys, I think I'm going to be roommates with my friend Lena. She's coming.
Really?
And it was a really good decision. I was really happy with it. But my roommates were like, no, you're leaving us. And it was like, speaking of bittersweet, because those were the roommates that, during the Great Icicle War of 2016, we used their car to move the ice.
I am still friends with them on Instagram.
Yeah, great people.
Wonderful.
Great people. But so yeah, wonderful. I was supposed to live with them again. Okay. And then you were coming and I was like, you know what? Because I tried to get you to live where I was living.
You did. Couldn't.
And so then I was like, here's another option. And then I switched to there. But anyway, we were roommates.
And
when Lena first got there,
I had only been home from my mission for a few months. Isaac, who I didn't know would be my future husband at the time, had drove me up to Rexburg and then he left. And I was still in this weird place of like, I just got home from my mission, but I haven't really settled anywhere. And my new roommate, along with the people we also lived with who I didn't know until I moved, my roommate in particular was someone who knew me as a missionary. And so I was like, there's people I don't know. My other roommate knew me as a missionary. And so I kind of had this inner conflict of like, who am I right now? And who am I allowed to be? Because I knew that there was a lot of aspects of who I was as a missionary that totally fit into being at BYU Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those aspects made it very difficult to date. And I was so like in between. And then literally breaking the ice was the great icicle war.
The icicle war. So we lived, if you're familiar with BYU, Idaho, we lived at Hillcrest.
Yes.
Which is, I would say, middle of the road. It's like not super nice, but not like super crappy and cheap. But they had like the way that the roofs were like slanted so steeply, they would get every winter these massive icicles. Like it would just
4 feet long, yeah. Like six and, like, or a 7 foot inches wide. Thick. Like, yeah, like so big, so big.
These massive, massive icicles. Yes. Like it would just like melt and freeze and melt and freeze for like weeks and months, and they would get these huge icicles.
And they would look really cool. And we would like to like walk, you know, down to go eat or whatever and admire the icicles and how cool they were. And both of us having lived in Wisconsin during the winter, I mean, we weren't any strangers.
We liked winter.
To harsh weather. Yeah, it was so funny. I like walked around in a little pea coat and people were like, are you freezing? I'm like, I literally just survived Wisconsin. Like, no, I'm fine.
The whole time I was at BYU Idaho, I wore I would wear a hoodie like this and a rain jacket. Literally every single winter that I was there.
Yeah, because it was totally not even a big
deal.
You
wear like a big coat and then you get to class and you have to like take it off and it's like wet and it's too much space.
And if you're like walking fast, you start to get hot. Yeah, so no. But we would walk around and we like to be outside, especially when it's cooler.
Yeah, we would like, we loved these icicles is basically that's the gist. We'd like take pictures of them. We were super into these very cool, massive icicles. Mm-hmm. And then one day, I don't remember how we discovered literally, it.
Well, okay, so we came back from a walk. This is how I remember it. So maybe something will spark your memory. Mm-hmm. And so if our apartment door is like right here, these neighbors are right here, and we're walking this way. So we see them. And their side of the building first.
Their door
and we're walking past.
Door. Yeah.
And we see that not only have they broken down all of these icicles, but they have like broken them in half. They built a snow fort, shoved all of these icicles all over. They had broken several, like all over. And they were like color, like taking color, like food
dye. Yeah, like they put like food dye or something on them. Yeah, like they had built around their porch,
which is like snowy, one thing,
icicle-y thing.
But then they also put a note on their door that said, do not touch our icicles. And we were
and we were really triggered by this for absolutely no reason.
Probably because the immaturity level was so profound, we couldn't stand it.
And at the time, we knew that like all four girls in this apartment were like 18 and they were all freshmen, like first semester freshmen.
It was
and
at the so time, obvious.
We were like 21, 22, 23.
So, yeah. So you were, so I went on my mission. So I was about 23, maybe had just turned 24, which made you what? 21, 22,
21, almost 22.
Yeah.
And so like there was
literally
no need
more
for us.
Mature than these girls.
No.
I don't know what was wrong with us.
We just were, like, so offended that they took these icicles, that they broke them. Like, they didn't just take them off the building, like, break them off the building. They broke them into, like, smaller pieces, most of them. And we were like, why did you do that? These are so, like, cool and big and beautiful. And we were just really upset. And so...
Well, and then the sign to add on to it of, like...
And then the sign was, like, these aren't your fucking icicles. Like, everyone pays to live here. Like... These don't belong to you just because you put them in front of your porch.
And of course, because they had broken them and pulled them down, now there was like all this ice around where all the walking paths were. So it's also slightly a dick move. We were much more concerned about the fact that the icicles were no longer in their place, but it was a very tiny dick move.
You could also, if you were trying to be an adult, you could argue that it was unsafe and rude. Yeah, disrespectful.
Yes, yes.
I don't remember. Our first retaliation, I think, was just taking some of the icicles. Because there was, like, wasn't there multiple?
I believe we had just knocked some of them back into the snow. And I think we stole a couple of the small ones. That was our first level of retaliation. Because
nothing
we were
crazy.
Like, fuck that. these icicles also belong to us. You know why? Because we are children of God, and this is God's school, and this is God's campus, which means this is also God's apartment complex, which means this is absolutely God's icicle, which means it belongs to everybody. Amen. How dare you?
In the name of Steals
the
Christ.
Icicle, Amen. Brings it into our apartment, lets it melt.
Yeah. So we took a couple icicles, and then the next day, there was, like, another note on top of the note on their door that was, like, seriously, these are our icicles. Don't fucking touch them. We didn't say fucking. But, you know, it was
like, that was, like, harsher... the intent. It was, like, do not touch. We're watching you.
Yeah. And we were, stood like...
in their window... and would peek anytime they heard any sort of noise. And we know this because we were totally throwing shit to like at the ground to see if they would like peek. And we were like, motherfuckers are literally sitting at their window watching, waiting for whoever it was that knocked down.
Upstairs window too.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So they were totally waiting because I don't know at this time if they knew it was us. I don't think so. I think they assumed it was just someone in one of the neighboring apartments, and they were so pissed off that they were like, when they said, we're watching you, they meant it. And they were really game on, motherfuckers, game on.
So let me set the scene for you. We waited until the middle of the night.
Well,
it was dark.
Yes. And you they were had actually all with gone your to friends. And yes. We had concocted this
I
plan. You recruited your
my
friends.
My old roommates, my good friends, good sports. In yes. it to win it kind of people.
Yes, absolutely.
I said,
they totally understood. They understood the assignment when we explained our anger. They understood. Yes.
I was like, do you want to help us get revenge? And they were like, absolutely, yes. Give us 2 minutes to put on our snow pants and like we will be there. Yes. So we come back from my old apartment to where I was living with Lena.
At like 1 o'clock in the morning.
It is the middle of the night.
Purposely, after curfew.
Yes.
To all the decrease the chances of anybody being caught or seen, whether they're walking by or whatever. Yes. All of their lights are off. And before you came over, you texted me and had me go outside just to double check. So I like very quietly opened the door. I snuck outside and I peeked over and I was like,
if we're doing this, we're doing it right.
Yep. Yep.
So we get there. We're with our friend. And she has a car, and she pulls up quietly, headlights off. Like
yes, very quiet.
And
very discreet.
We take every single icicle.
And the reason we needed them and the car is because
they're big ones.
Icicles were huge, and not to mention
heavy.
And this also reminds me. They had, I think this is why we were mad. I don't know if you remember, but they also had taken down some of what people were building in the snow. They had broken it apart to build up on their like little fort.
Oh, like people's like snowmen
yes,
and other
so they
people's
had broken down what other people had built and taken like big parts of like the frozen snow that they liked.
And we're like, this is not how you build Zion. You build Zion with revenge.
Yes.
With a blood
so
oath on
the
name of Joseph
not
Smith.
Not only were we carrying these heavy icicles, we were carrying these big chunks of like snow-packed ice that were a part of people in our apartment who had just went out and created something in the snow for everyone. I think this is why we concocted this plan. Now that I am.
Yeah.
Yes. So we needed everybody to carry everything.
Yes. Essentially, we took their whole snow fort and
we
left
took
just
literally
like,
everything.
Like a regular amount of snow, like the amount of snow that a normal, than other porches had around.
And
it.
Don't worry, we did not put it to waste. No, we would never waste God's precious creations.
We put those icicles in the trunk of the car, and then we drove across the street to like the path where if you're at Hillcrest and you're walking to campus, you have to cross at the crosswalk because you will get a $75 fine if you jaywalk in Rexburg,
yes,
Idaho.
Yes.
So we put them like literally when you cross that crosswalk, we put them all along that sidewalk.
And
so
we made it obvious that it was like one individual.
It was like in a line.
And we made it obvious that it was theirs, and we made it like all the way down this path.
Like there was no way you could get to campus
and
not see it. And
not see it. And they were so big and so like I can't even describe to you. They were huge.
They were very big.
And so it was very obvious for everybody who walked that direction.
And there was, I distinctly remember, like, it had, like, freshly snowed.
Yes.
And so it was, like, it wasn't even, like, people had walked on the snow and there's a chunk of ice. It was just, like, this beautiful, perfect canvas of blank snow with, like, giant chunks of ice stuck up in it. Like, Elsa herself had just been.
And that is literally, yes, that is actually a perfect description.
I mean, and then, like, our friends went back to their apartment. Like, we went in and we went to bed. Never spoke to these girls again. Went to church with them, I'm assuming.
But guess,
like,
what? They left the icicles alone. There was never a snow fort made of other people's creations and God's precious icicles.
God was on our
icicles.
Side that day.
They got the message. And I actually feel like there was, like, a con... Like, I don't know if I'm just, like, making this up in my head, but I feel like there was, like, a conversation of some kind that somebody else was, like, confused about what happened there and was upset that they had, like, woken up and all of their little winter creations were just gone. And because it had snowed, there was literally no footprints or anything, so it looked like they just up and disappeared.
I don't know what energy that was that, like, prompted us to do that, but I think it kind of goes to, like, you're so limited at BYU Idaho. Like, you can't drink, you can't party, you have to be home by midnight. Like, you can't be in
you're
the
in the middle of nowhere
bedrooms of other people. Like, you know, you can only be in, like, the living room of, like, boys' apartments. Like, you can't, there's nothing open, like, no stores are open, there's nowhere to go. If you don't have a car, you can't go anywhere.
Yep. There's no way to explore like that, because a lot of these people are 18 to 21 years old.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's really no way to, like, safely kind of be like that young adult, because you can't drink, you can't party, you can't see a rated R movie, you can't actually have a boy in your apartment, you can't go on a date without being told on.
It's,
you know,
like EFY.
Exactly.
Like, it's like other people going to, like, non-religious universities are having an experience of, like you said, like, becoming an adult, having relationships, like, testing those boundaries, like, really not having anyone to say, like, you can't eat this, you can't drink this, you can't stay up that late, like,
and you have
you can't
to
be
here
out that
and
late.
Do this at this time, and
yeah,
your
and so
roommates
you learn...
aren't literally signing contracts to be pitted against you if you go against,
yes,
you know?
Exactly. So you learn for yourself, like, when you go to a different college, because, like, I did my freshman year at a state school in Wisconsin, and, like, going there, it was like I had a roommate that would literally stay up all night and sleep all day. Because of that situation, like, not only did we learn, like, a lot of conflict resolution because the both of us were just like, this is not working as roommates, but also, like, there was an ability to just be like, you know what, this environment for me is not working, I'm just gonna go, like, spend the night somewhere else. And, like, you really are not even supposed to do that at BYU Idaho. And so it just is like this summer camp environment where you have all of these, like, restrictions and boundaries, like, placed upon you. And yet you're, like, at a time in your life where you are supposed to be figuring out your own personal boundaries. And there's no space to do that. And there's no room to, like, even if you're not drinking, like, because I don't think you have to drink and party or, like, have sex to do that. But there's not even the option to, like,
you can't
go
even
get
work
pizza
a late
at
night,
like,
shift
midnight
at Walmart
with your friends
and come
yeah.
home late from just going to work and be scolded for coming home
and
past
there's a
curfew.
Stigma around everything you do. And I think at BYU Idaho people really care,
especially
about what
because
other people
of
think.
How small the town is. There's no escape.
There's it's really not. And especially because, like, your neighbors are your ward members. And they're also people that you have classes with. There are probably people that you work with. Like, it's just so small that there's no freedom to, like, really figure out who you are as an adult. And, like, we talked about this in the last episode, but you can't just be like, oh, I'm gonna, like, try this new thing or go to this new place, because you have to be there and you have to be doing what everyone is doing. You have to be going to church. You have to be doing your calling. You have to be taking religion classes. Like, everyone's taking the same fucking classes. But, like, who you are as a person comes second to just, like, here I am at BYU Idaho. And, like, my identity right now is a student at BYU Idaho, which is really similar to like when you go on a mission. It's like, mm-hmm. we love you and God loves you for who you are, but like right now your job is like be a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and like that is who you are first of all.
Anything
and
then everything else comes to be second. Set aside. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So these girls were like, tee-hee-hee, icicles. And we were like, tee-hee-hee, we're going to steal their icicles, when all of us should have been like going on dates, like having fun, going to parties, hosting parties. And again, like not saying you have to like drink or have sex or like do any of those things, but like literally just like expressing yourself and making connections with people, instead of like, this is the limit to like what I can do that sort of fulfills my need to like be rebellious, or for
and of
them,
course all of the social interactions that are available to you are school, church. Like they're put on by the school and the church, mm-hmm. and so you can't even decide that you want to do something social. For instance, as a single person, I took myself to like this I can't remember what it was called, but they would like do an hour of dance instruction, and then they would have like 1 or 2 hours where they would just play music. And of course they encouraged everyone to like take what you learned and practice and like change partners and, you know, get out there and socialize. But what would happen is I would go to the practice, and of course I would be paired up because that was forced when you're practicing, and then the music would come on and I wasn't good enough, pretty enough, skinny enough, whatever. And I would literally not be asked to dance at all the entire night. And it was mm-hmm. like, I really wish I could make myself like look pretty and what I would feel comfortable wearing and just go to a bar, and I don't have to drink, but I would love to have some friends who would like just go out and dance with me just for fun. Mm-hmm. But there was the pressure that I had to be dating and finding a partner. And I didn't have, this was when you had left, I didn't have any friends. I was trying to make them, but like everything is put on by the church. And when everything is put on by the church, you have a lot of, there's a lot of things that you have to uphold that are just really ridiculous and stressful. And mm-hmm. it's not conducive to like finding out who you are, because anything that you may be has to kind of be like church approved first. If that
yeah,
makes
absolutely.
Any sense.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even go to one of those like paint things. Like sometimes they're hosted like all over, and sometimes it's in a bar, and you have to be old enough to get in the bar to like do like, but it's like, do you have to order a drink? No, you just have to be old enough to go. But then like in Rexburg, like what option was there? Like there wasn't one. If I wanted to do that, I had to go to the campus and I had to do something put on by the church. And it was like, what is this fucking, I don't actually have a choice in mm-hmm. anything I do here.
Yeah.
And there's so many options of things I could do.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And even, you know, in thinking back to when I was going to school in Wisconsin, like the town that I was in, like all the bars would have like karaoke night, like for students, or like trivia night. And it was like geared towards the college students, like in this town. And like, you're right. Like alcohol is served there. I mean, it's Wisconsin, alcohol is served everywhere. So like, but there was never, I don't ever remember like feeling a pressure to drink. I don't ever remember feeling like anyone gave a fuck if I was drinking or not. I mean, I've been going to bars since I was like 18 years old and with friends. And I literally just order a Dr. Pepper and like would hang out with my friends. And it like literally no one cared. Like technically if a police officer came in, like they would care and they'd be like, get out of this bar. But like, you know, the in terms of the people around me. And I think in Rexburg, like let's say the movie theater or like a local business wants to put on an activity, like they're not going to not just serve alcohol, but they're not going to do anything that would be outside of the comfort zones of like active and believing members of the church, even though it's like off campus, it's not associated with the church, but like because it's geared towards the students. So even in Rexburg, like you said, there's nowhere to go. There's nothing you can do where you can have that like freedom, that flexibility, that like anonymity to like just go and be yourself and like try it out. But I feel like even in Idaho and Utah, in certain areas, you can't just try things because the church is always like over your shoulder.
And if there's any sort of appearance of evil, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
all bets are off.
I stayed at a hotel in Utah once, like I was flying home the next day, and so my parents had been like, we'll get you a hotel by the airport. And I went to dinner with a friend from my mission and her like boyfriend at the time. Like, they picked me up and we went to this like Chinese buffet and we like chatted and had dinner, and then they dropped me off and I was like, wow, that was so fun. But it was still kind of like early in the night. I was like, maybe I'll get some like room service, maybe I'll order some takeout, like dessert. And like, I was just like living it up, living my best like Eloise at the Plaza life in this like airport hotel. And so I'm like in this hotel room and I'm thinking about what I want to order. And I have this moment of being like, I could literally order whatever I wanted. Like, I could like Postmate wine to this hotel. Like, I could get wine from room service. There's a coffee machine and free coffee in this hotel room that I could just make and drink right now. And having the ability to be like, but I won't do that because of like the covenants that I've made, really brought me like no satisfaction. It felt more like I can't do this because I agreed to Sky Daddy that I wouldn't do it however many years ago, and like now here I am and I'm like, it's not an option for me, when like I'm just an adult in a hotel like trying to have a good time.
That you mention having wine brought to you, because you actually can't do that in Utah.
Well, listen, I didn't do it.
There is no we were so in love with the idea that in Vegas, literally 24/7, you could have weed delivered to you without a fee. And here you can't even buy alcohol on a Sunday. And in Rexburg, you would have to go like 45 minutes out of your way to see a rated R movie because the movie theater in town literally refused to play anything that was rated R. And so even if you aren't Mormon and you just live in the area, you still can't do what you want to do because somehow, some way, the church just hovers over you like a heavy motherfucking cloud, kind of like your mission president's emails, and just on you. Yep.
Excellent segue.
It'd be like
so. That. Yeah, it really do be like that. Sometimes you're just living your life and then boom.
Yep, sometimes you're just living your life and you check your email and you're like, oh my God, triggered. Sometimes you hop on to record a podcast and your friend is wearing a shirt and you're like, oh my God, I'm triggered.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. So my mission president, I had two. My second mission president is a wonderful person. He's hilarious. I think he talked about in maybe the Christmas one how he had like a Christmas party for us as missionaries and he did like a magic show for us. And he was like, we have to have root beer floats, and like insisted that everyone had a root beer float. So like, he's a fun guy, you know. He's not super uptight about most things, but I would say like the biggest exception would be the gospel. And I think that that describes a lot of members. Honestly.
Totally.
So my mission president sends out weekly emails still. He came home from his mission, I want to say, July of 2019. So it's been a while. And he still sends a weekly email. And he sends it out to, like, almost all of, like, the missionaries that he served with. So it's, like, several hundred people. And he sent one on Christmas that is literally just, like, a list of scriptures. Literally just, I'll try to show you, just a list
scriptures.
There are probably like a few hundred. It's different references
for those
to different...
of you who are just listening. She is not kidding.
I'm it scrolling and scrolling and scrolling
and scrolls of scriptures.
Yeah, wow. So it's he says it's I've included a list of titles that refer to Christ and the reference for those titles. So it's like Almighty, Revelations 1:8, Matthew 28:18, oh, Alpha Lord. And Omega, and then the reference, and it goes, there's all the way down to Word, John 1:1, Word. So I reply to him. I don't reply all, and I'm very paranoid about replying all, so I like quadruple check that I'm just replying to him.
Of course.
And I say, Merry Christmas, hope you have a wonderful holiday season, and Happy New Year. And then I explain how I recently moved to Massachusetts and started a new job. I said I'm spending the Christmas season away from my family, which has been bittersweet. That's like the key word of this episode. Like, take a shot every time we say bittersweet. And or maybe don't, because we might say it more.
It could happen a whole lot.
But I have a wonderful family of friends here. And then I say, last night, I went to Catholic Mass. I have a friend that sings in the choir who invited me. The service was very different than what I'm used to, so I mostly just listened to the music and looked around at the beautiful cathedral. After lots of hymns and songs, I didn't know they sang, O Come All Ye Faithful, and that was a special, and that was special and made me remember my Christmas as a missionary. And then I say, at this point in my life, I'm not a religious person, but hearing that hymn made me feel loved, and getting your Merry Christmas email this morning did as well. Thank you for keeping in touch. I hope you know I love you. Merry Christmas.
Beautiful.
So it's like, hey,
you don't make a Merry big deal Christmas. Out of it.
Mm-hmm. I am not religious, but you know, your email made me feel really loved and it improved my Christmas, and I appreciate that. And then he responds, I can't even read the whole thing because it's too much.
He's
so let me
so
give you
long-winded
the highlights. And keep in mind that, like, when I get this email from him and when I read it, as much as it pisses me off, I 100% believe that, like, he sent this with, like, the purest of intentions, that he is sincerely concerned for me and my spiritual being. And as much as he says that he loves me and, like, he lists all these wonderful attributes that I have, like, I sincerely believe that he does love me and that he does see all of these things in me. And so I don't think that it is insincere, but it is a lot to come at you the day yes. after Christmas.
And I am just going to put it in perspective for anyone who may come across this and has not left the church and may not understand why this makes us feel some type of way. Just imagine having ex-Mormon or anti-Mormon material sent to your inbox every single week. And then when you decide to respond to something special, like a birthday message or a Christmas email, and you very subtly set a boundary, and mm-hmm. that person's response is to come back at you with more material that does not interest you. I just want you to contemplate, ponder, if you will. I invite you to ponder how you would feel about that.
Also, trigger warning, somehow it's a little fatphobic. So if that's something you're sensitive about or that upsets you, it's coming.
Yep, trigger warning, my friends.
In a Christmas email.
Oh my God, that totally just reminded me of something that a missionary told me once. Anyway, continue.
Okay, so he says, Sister Quigley, which is my alter ego, it was so good to hear from you yesterday. We sure have tender memories of serving with you and glad that our email brightened up your day yesterday. I'm sorry you had to spend Christmas away from your family. That's a hard time of year to be alone, but you're never alone as you always have your Heavenly Father in Christ. Not to mention that Sister Blank and I also love you. The email could have ended there.
And that would have been enough.
And it would have been like, you know what? I appreciate.
That's acceptable.
I appreciate every word, including the Heavenly Father bit, you know? But it doesn't end there. I was surprised to hear you say that you were not religious. I don't know what that means. But I know that you had a strong testimony of the church and of the Savior when you were serving in the mission field. I don't know what that means.
First of all, he's fishing for more information. Are you just, like, less active? Have you removed your records? Are you, like, anti? Like, where on the spectrum? Second of all, I hate when people use me and what I did and who I was as a missionary as a tool or a weapon against me. It's like, I did love you and I was sincere. And at that time, that was my truth. But that doesn't mean that who I was then and who I am now to my core is suddenly completely different because I'm not religious anymore or I'm somewhere on that spectrum. Stop using that against me.
Mm-hmm. When you left and when other people have left, it had been, and now I have obviously a different perspective. That's how learning and growing and experiencing new things works. But I had a hard time conceptualizing, like, loving the church because you were a part of the church and not loving the church for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of empathy for my mission president in reading this email and knowing that he is trying to balance his, like, oh, this girl, she served her mission with me and she was so faithful and she had this testimony and, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then me being like, I'm not religious. him being like, oh, I don't understand how that, how this can be the same person, you know? So he says, also, I know that you can do hard things because I saw you complete your full 18 months of your mission. And I know that was not an easy thing for you, but you did it because of your faith, love, and testimony of Jesus Christ.
No, you did it because of the social pressures to stay and how bad it would have been mentally and emotionally had you have gone home early, even though that probably would have been best for you.
Yeah.
That's just my two cents.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, I stayed because it was a combination of I didn't want the social stigma of leaving my mission early and having to explain that to people or having people make assumptions about why that was. And also I felt an immense pressure, religious pressure, to finish serving my mission so that I could get those blessings that come when you like faithfully serve your whole mission and return with honor, because I was a convert.
Saying would extend to people like your dad, whom you love and adore very much and would love an opportunity to be with for all eternity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had multiple blessings on my mission that were, oh, if you, you know, do this, then you're, you know, if you faithfully serve your mission, then like your dad will, his heart will be softened and you will see him be baptized in the church. And I had a couple that mentioned my brother as well, who neither of them have ever been members. And so as a missionary, when everything in the church is like, family is forever, family is forever, family is forever, like I was just desperately trying to cling on to finishing my mission so that in some way, in some world, like my family could be together forever, even though like my parents are divorced and I'm not even that close with my sibling. So like it's it's not even like it's not the love, it's like the logistics, but whatever. So that was a big reason why I finished my mission. It was a testimony, but it was also like a fear of not receiving those blessings if I didn't finish my mission. And then he talks about how I'm a remarkable young lady. Thank you. And the Lord has many blessings and things for you yet to do to help prepare the earth for his second coming. You're a daughter of God and have such divine potential. You are infinite worth. God doesn't make any mistakes. You are as Esther in the Old Testament and have been sent to this earth life for, quote, a time as such as this. You are loved and greatly cared for by many people. Do not give up. People fall out of church and out of the faith for the same reason they fall out of bed. They are not in far enough. And by the way, that was me skimming. Like, I didn't even read that word for word because it's long. And this is where, like you were saying, boundaries are crossed.
Yeah.
Because I've established that I'm not religious.
And that was a choice that you have made. Whether he likes it or not, that is a choice you made. And it was a statement. It wasn't, I'm questioning my faith and I want your help. It was a statement of where you are at right now.
And I wonder if the reaction would be different if I had said, I have joined Judaism and I really feel that it's true and it's right for me and this is my faith now. I think the reaction would be similar, but I feel like there's a level of respect from like religious people to religious people that sometimes gets misplaced when we're talking about religious people and non-religious people.
Yeah.
Because if someone says, if I say Merry Christmas and someone says, oh, I don't celebrate Christmas, I celebrate Hanukkah, I'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Happy Hanukkah. I hope you have a wonderful Hanukkah and enjoy your time with your family, blah, blah, blah.
No
but
big
if
deal.
Someone says Merry Christmas and someone else is like, I don't celebrate Christmas as I am not a Christian and it's not a tradition that I celebrate, there is like sort of this like, oh, well, you know, like, Christ died for you and you know it doesn't have to be super Christian, you know, you can still participate, and that boundary is not as respected as much. And I think that it, not just with holidays but like in general, if you're saying, oh, I'm not Mormon but I am this, and you have something to replace it with, there's like, well, at least they still have faith. And when I'm just like, I'm not religious, I think he's like, oh, there's like a place for me to put religion in her life.
Yep.
Because he's not reading it as me saying, I have chosen to remove religion from my life. And additionally, I am very happy with that choice. Right. And it is going well for me and it has improved my mental and physical and emotional health and well-being. He's just like, there's no religion there. And that therefore means there's a space for me to insert
Yes.
My religion.
Must fill the hole.
Yes. And then he says, please stay in touch. And he asks me briefly about my job. He asks me about my parents. He asks me if my mother is religious. And then he's, which, what kind of information would that give you? Unless he's planning on, like, teaming up with my mom, which I could very well see. Reaching mm-hmm. out and being like, we gotta get her back. What can we do?
A former bishop of mine reached out to my mom when I actually wasn't going to say anything publicly until you and I had our falling out. And I was like, apparently I have not been transparent enough. Here's what it is. And he called my mom and he was like, I'm very sad and I'm very concerned. Granted, I understand, because just like you, with the understanding of where your mission president was coming from, out of total sincerity and love.
Yeah. There's not a way that Mormons are taught to react to that other than this, or to just like ignore it. Mm-hmm. And I think ignoring it is totally reasonable. Like, if you don't know how to respond to someone being like, I feel this way,
you don't have to address it at all.
Yeah. You can be like, that's great for you. And just like move on with your day. And I'm grateful I have many friends, roommates, companions that I met while I was in the church that have like chosen that method, or have maybe every once in a while been like, hey, church, and I'm just like, nope, and they're like, okay, just checking in, you know, like, and it's not this mm-hmm. response.
And then you can tell by what is coming that everything embedded in this response is a judgment upon you and all the things you may not be doing correctly, and what people around you may not be doing correctly. He's trying to make sense, similarly to how you saw alcohol in our fridge and you thought it must be Isaac. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have been me. He's probably thinking, what if it's her mom? Like, what if it's just because she moved and her mom, and between those two things, like, there's just like nothing. And what if she isn't doing A, B, and C? And that's just why, like, what if she would just do these things and like her faith will come back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's how, you know, not just in other people losing their faith, but that's the reaction that when you start to question your own faith, you're like, okay, I must not be praying hard enough. I must not be worthy enough.
Because that's what they tell you will solve the problems of, mm-hmm. which it doesn't. It just perpetuates the cycle, you know?
Yeah.
Hamster on just a wait until I get to
my response to
finish it first.
So he says, we had a wonderful Christmas, we spent it with family. He talks about how he's working at the temple every Saturday and keeping busy with missionary work in the ward. He's going to Hawaii in the spring.
Almost a subliminal way of saying, well, I'm doing all of the things I am supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And look at the blessing, we get to go to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Not gonna lie, we're in a pandemic. I don't want to be on a plane for that long.
No. I wouldn't mind being in Hawaii, though. I'll say that.
No, if I could get there via, like, a tube that just, like, shot me individually.
Boom! Torpedo bag.
Like when you go to the bank and you, like, put your, like, money in and it just, like,
the zoop. Dream. As soon as we can make that happen.
And then he says, we plan to have another mission reunion in Idaho and in Salt Lake this year in October. It'd be awesome if you could come to that. Would love to visit with you. Is there a time I could call? Also, I would like to give you a challenge for the new year. One is a spiritual challenge and the other is a physical challenge.
Pause really quickly. Those of you who have not served missions, this is exactly how you are taught to get someone to do what you want to do. Tell them it's a challenge or an invitation, and then plan to follow up mm-hmm. to make sure they're doing it. Continue.
Yeah, even the words you're taught to use is like, you know, will you accept the invitation to be baptized? It's not like, do you want to get baptized? It's like, will you do it? So I would like you to read from the Book of Mormon every day for 10 to 15 minutes. And to walk every day for at least 3 miles. Let me know if you will accept that challenge as a New Year's resolution. Physical exercise always helps one to feel better about life and themselves, and reading the Book of Mormon will help you to feel God's love for you. Please let me know if you are willing to accept one or both of these challenges. And this is where the fat phobia comes in. Because if you've never watched our YouTube videos, like, I am a plus size person. And I have been, like, most of my life. Yes.
There is no outing anybody. We both are. We are well fed.
Yes. And, like, have been, I would say, since, like, middle school, you know? So this is not new for me, for someone to see something going on in my life and be like, have you tried exercise? Have you tried eating better? And first of all, let me say that, like, it is never okay, unless you are someone's doctor, to comment on someone's body. And that goes for if they're overweight, if they're underweight, if they're taller or shorter than you think they are, if you don't like the way that they're doing their makeup, if you don't like the clothes that they are wearing. It is not
piercings or tattoos. It's just not your business.
It is not anyone else's job to make their body look appealing to you. Yeah, I would say that's the first thing, is like, there's no need to ever bring in someone else's, like, physical, like, the way that they look or, like, their physical activity. Like, there's just no need for it.
And by suggesting that they do something like a specific type of diet or eating a certain way or dressing a certain way or adding exercise, that is a comment on your body. That is them passively telling you that what you look like is not acceptable to them.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that concern is valid or not is none of their business.
Right. And even if he's not saying, you know, even if his intent is, you know, I think you should add physical exercise because it, you know, it helps one to feel better, like, blah, blah, blah. The underlying level of that is, I can tell by the way that you look that you're not getting the amount of physical exercise that I think you should get. And I also think that your ability to think critically and make decisions about your spirituality is based on your mental and or physical health and not on your intelligence as an individual, which is insulting for, like,
it's
another
such a
reason.
Dig at you for so many reasons.
And it, like, adds on this level that, like, well, you're fat, so obviously you're stupid too, like, well, yeah, you're fat, so that's why you're single, and that's why you're not married. And if you were married before
you
left school,
you
would still be active
in the
church. Yeah. There's so many levels to it. It's just completely unnecessary, and I ignored it in my response, which I will read to you now. Because I had a hard time. Like, immediately I got this email, and I texted you, and I was like, in all capitals, I was like, Lena, like, you're about to be triggered. Like, I have an email to send you, because I got this email and I saw that he responded and was like, oh, I wonder what he had to say. And I read that first paragraph and I thought, well, that was fine. And then I continued to read and I was like,
this
man, yeah, this man who,
it is no longer okay.
I, like I've said, like, I have respect for him. However, I think that this fat phobia and this, I don't know what it's called when you're prejudiced against atheists, but I'm sure there's a word for it. But that, like, internalized bias comes through in that his email response to me so hard and so heavy that I read it and I was immediately like, wow, he sees me as not someone who is able to make reasonable and rational decisions for myself. Because I said to him, I am not religious, and he saw that as an opportunity to change my mind.
To fix you like you're broken.
And other than saying, I don't know what that means, which is not a question, it's a statement, he made no effort to, like, understand how I came to be non-religious, what that does mean for me, how I'm replacing those religious traditions with non-traditions in my life, you know, how it's affecting me. He made zero effort and just immediately jumped in with, well, I don't know what that means, but here's how you fix it. And I never asked for him to fix it, because as much as our relationship was mission president and missionary, like, our relationship currently is, like, acquaintances, right? Like, he is a person. He's an adult. He has his own family and his own life.
Yep.
I am a person. I am an adult. I have my own family and my own life. And we are literally on opposite coasts of the country. And we don't talk, like, we don't speak to each other. Like, he sends emails and I read them. Like, there's not a regular back and forth. this was like a one-time thing for me to be like, I appreciated getting an email on Christmas morning. Thank you. I love you. Have a Merry Christmas. While I believe he has good intentions, it is still hurtful to get this email and be like, he thinks so little of me that he's like not even willing to have a conversation with me about it. Like, he thinks so little of me that he thinks if he just types out his testimony about who I am and what I am and how God loves me, and if he just asks me to read the Book of Mormon and walk 3 miles a day, which, for it's December in Massachusetts, but like, you know, to throw these things at me, and he thinks that my physical well-being, my physical health, my physical appearance somehow needs to be brought into this conversation that was supposed to be Merry Christmas and like that's it. It hurt my feelings. And it made me mad, but it also, like, made me upset. Because I would never and have never, like, I get an email from him every week with spiritual content, and I don't respond with, you know, that was an interesting question you shared at the end of yours, and I have more interesting questions about church history and doctrine and policy and blah. Like, I don't do that. Because I understand that he is reaching out to me via his weekly emails in a way to say, like, hello, I love you. Here's what I did this week. Here's where my spirituality is at. And he doesn't give a fuck
where you are,
where I am,
or where anybody else is, because he has absolutely crossed boundaries of sharing personal, intimate details of people's relationship with God in his emails to people who do not know his children. You know, he's talking about his less active kids, and it's like, do they know that you're talking about them and saying these things in the emails?
Like, and he's not saying like, oh, my kids are less active and it makes me sad. He's saying specifics of what they believe and conversations that they've had,
almost giving an update of like how they aren't progressing.
So as much as I wanted to believe this was gonna go another way, and I feel like when you're in that relationship with an active Mormon, and that time comes, and sometimes it's sooner and sometimes it's later, but like that time comes when they're like, hey, I saw this conference talk and thought of you, or, you know, I really think if you did this, it would help you, or, you know, whatever, that you're like, oh, as much as they see me as a friend and they love me, there also is always going to be in active like Mormon's mind
motive.
And it's like a pressure that comes from what feels like God to be like, oh, I have to do this and say this and share this. It's like my responsibility as an active member. And at the same time, even if, I mean, in the Book of Mormon, God tells Nephi to like kill someone who's drunk and helpless and defenseless.
It makes no sense whatsoever, but he does it anyway.
He's just like, God told me to.
And then he even steals his shit.
And pretends to be him. Like, impersonates him.
There's a lot of crimes going on.
It's like boom, 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 bing, bong, right in the beginning.
And most people get to that part in the Book of Mormon when they're like learning and they're like, huh?
You're like, wait, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? And you're like, well, see, God told him that he needed to. And, you know, because he did that, then we're able to have whatever scripture is. And it's like, couldn't God have done that? Like, God can do literally anything. So like, couldn't he have done anything else to like make that happen without murdering this innocent person? But then you read the Old Testament and it's like, God gets pissed and kills 6,000 people. So like, really makes sense.
He does what he wants.
I bring that up to say that, like, you know, if we're taught regularly, and Mormons are taught since childhood from the Book of Mormon, you know, if God tells you to do something, no matter how uncomfortable it makes you, how unusual it might seem, if God tells you to do something, like, I will go and do the things the Lord commands. It doesn't matter if you can rationally be like, I'm crossing a boundary, or I am doing something that will make this person uncomfortable, or, you know, I don't want to bring this up with Meg. I know that she's left the church. I know that she's not interested, but I feel like God is telling me to like text her this conference talk. Like, you'll do it because the church has taught you and you've been indoctrinated your whole life to like put God above boundaries. Including your own. There are plenty of things that people do as members that they're not comfortable doing, and they do it because of the social pressure and the spiritual pressure. Of being a Mormon, like going through a temple.
I feel like there are a couple good lessons to be learned from that. And I think they have nothing to do with religion, just really good communication skills. Two things, intent is never greater than impact. Mm-hmm. It does not matter if your intent is the purest of the pure. If it lands and it hurts, you are still responsible for that. And if we're going to bring it into religious terms, this is when you apologize. And an apology is, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And you don't do it again. There is no, I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm sorry, but those are not true apologies. Second, and I learned this from Meg, and I actually thought that it was so brilliant. I sent her a text message the other day, and I like ranted about something, and Meg, you responded, and you said, do you want like my opinions and help solving this, or do you want like sympathy? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is another thing of like, he could have questioned and said, you're not religious anymore. Do you want to talk about that? Mm-hmm. He didn't do that.
Yeah.
So he crossed a boundary. And so there are ways, you know, everyone is a curious little cat and kitten sometimes. If you're really that curious, it's okay to approach someone in a manner of that, you know, kind of in that scenario. For instance, I was doing some research, putting some material together. I was doing it about transgender parents and birth. And I sent a message to a transgender friend of mine. And I said, hey, do you have the emotional space to give me some like advice and critique? Mm-hmm. I was not going to send this person material that could have been triggering, especially because what I was trying to do is make it inclusive and make it so even though my intention is good, it doesn't land an impact in a negative way. Mm-hmm. I still wanted to make sure that I was not stepping into a boundary that was not emotionally, physically, mentally welcoming to me. And this is the dynamic of leaving the church and trying to confront people who are still in the church, and, you know, vice versa, because Meg and I have also been in the scenario of being in the church and people we love are leaving or starting to drift away. You, first of all, the church does not teach consent or communication. Everything is very passive. Everything is based on fear and shame. And so when you leave, it's really difficult to simply just express where you are at that current time, because people are like, you're not allowed to change. You're not allowed to go from what I liked you to be to who you are now. And I just want everyone to know that in terms of like proper communication, setting boundaries, you're also allowed to change your mind and your opinions. Mm-hmm. Just because you had them at one point or believe something to be true at one point, when you're presented with new facts or different information or new scenarios, or heaven forbid, you just get more experience and you grow a little bit older, it's okay to like change your mind and acknowledge that you like said and did really stupid things, you know, just like we talked about, like, I'm sorry for what I said when I was Mormon. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this is one of those things is if this man were to ever step outside of, you know, his rose-colored glasses, he may realize that what he did was really hurtful in a lot of ways. And just because that was not what he wanted to do, that doesn't mean that isn't where it landed.
Right.
And so,
and even within a conversation, I feel like there's, you are allowed to go back and be like, you know what? 2 minutes ago, I said I wanted to talk about this, and now
it's affecting me this way, and I don't want to talk about it. Yep.
And I considered responding in a way that was like, I know that I brought up not being religious, but I really don't want to talk about it. I'm in a place where I'm happy with that decision. Like, and then just mm-hmm. leaving it at that. And like when I was typing my response, there was many things, like I made a comment about the challenges and then I took it out. I was like, I just don't want to talk about those challenges because it's so disrespectful to me. Like if you texted me and you're like, hey, I want to issue a challenge for you to walk 3 miles a day. Will you accept that challenge? Which, as we've talked about, which will be edited out, like people, like someone has done that to me and it ended a friendship because it was like, you don't have any authority over me. And our relationship is based on like friendship and mutual respect. And someone who respects someone else doesn't like pop into their life and issue them a challenge to change something that they don't like about them. Like, that would be like if when I saw the alcohol in your fridge, I was like, I would like to issue you a challenge to dump this alcohol down the drain. Like, no, I'm a guest in your home. Like, there's alcohol in your fridge. You're legally allowed to have it. Like, you're not, like, pregnant. You're not, like, endangering a child. You know what I mean? Like, there's, like, nothing I can do about that. And to issue a challenge. And on the flip side,
I also felt like I had to walk around eggshells that visit to not hurt you. And that's the other thing, too, about boundaries is, like, just because you set a boundary, whether you set it right away or you set it a long time down the road when a relationship has been established, that doesn't mean you're an asshole or a bad guy.
Right.
And the Mormon Church does not encourage people to undergo self-examination in a way to help them set boundaries that are safe for them.
Right.
And so I felt weird in my own home. And it's just like, how do you properly respond in this scenario where in my snotty ass ways, I would have been like, oh, hell no. And I would have tried to be all prim and proper, but I also would have gotten very dirty.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I didn't bring it up. I was like, I'll internalize that. And in a couple years when we have a podcast, I'll bring it up.
Exactly. And so it's like, I feel like in my perspective, he kind of does deserve to be put into his place. And even if, like, he wouldn't take it. It wouldn't land well. He wouldn't understand what you were doing. And it's one of those things where you almost have to decide if the fight is even worth it, when it is and when it's not. And I think that's why it's worth bringing up now on the podcast, just because if anybody is listening and they can relate to this in any sort of manner, like, this is a common behavior. You're not alone. It's okay if you have acted kind of in a volatile way, like I have done in response to some of the judgments I've gotten from people. Mm-hmm. But it's also okay to dismiss it entirely and understand that whoever is doing this to you literally is not on a level of capability to even have a calm adult conversation about it. And it's okay to be anywhere in between.
Yeah. I think too, it's also a good time to, like, sort of put out there that it doesn't matter, like, how far out of the church you are, like, or how I would consider myself, like, very, it's at this point in my life, it is difficult for members of the church to, like, trigger me and, like, hurt me, I guess. Because I just have, for the past couple of years, just been constantly, like, dealing with it and coping with it. And, like, having this podcast has been an amazing, like, outlet, and connecting with all of these other, like, ex-Mormons on Instagram and TikTok and on Facebook, and being able to be like, oh, there's a lot of people who are experiencing this, and they are intelligent and they're kind, and they sometimes they get triggered and sometimes they laugh it off, and, like, either response is totally fine. But at the same time, to get something like this from a person that I do care about and I do respect, and to, like, feel very hurt, you know, in that moment felt like weakness, to be like, oh, here I am years later, and this man that was, like, my mission president is sending me this, like, stupid fucking email, and he's not even thinking about it, for, like, he just typed it out and, like, sent it.
He just typed it and sent it, yep.
And here I am 1,000+ miles away, and it's, like, ruining my day and hurting me and making me question what the people I care about think of me and see me as. And while that felt like weakness, like, as it was first happening, like, to just turn to this other community of other people who have experienced this and be like, that's okay. Like, that happens to me all the time. I'm in this group on Facebook, and it's constantly people sharing screenshots of, like, oh, this is what my mom said to me at Christmas dinner. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's just, it's hard to leave something that is so, I mean, culty as the Mormon Church, and to leave it and move on with your life and just be, like, free of it. Because even if you are free of it, like, it follows you. And it doesn't mean that actions of individuals, like, still don't, like, hurt you. Because this was very hurtful.
I love that this has kind of turned into, like, a purity culture, like, judgment type of episode, because this has reminded me of so many things that happened so close together by very active Mormons that I'm just like, this is it. This is the problem. You know, like, you were like, I felt weak. that was the goal. That is the manipulation working, especially in a patriarchal circumstance where at one point he had, what's the word?
Authority.
Authority, dominion, mm-hmm. you know? In my last mission area with my second to last companion, there was a senior couple who had us over for dinner. I don't exactly remember how the conversation got to this point, but he essentially told my companion and I, who are both plus size girls, that it was our responsibility to make ourselves physically attractive so we could marry someone who would give us the emotional things that we needed. And it bothered us so bad. We went home and we like ranted about it to each other, and I still have it in my journals, and we cried about it. And this is coming from, you know, a very old senior couple. Then I go to BYU, Idaho, and I start to become friends with this kid. Very long story short, I kind of had a thing for him, thought he maybe liked me too. We were having a conversation, and the most bold and honest he ever got with me about how he felt about me was, I saw the tattoo on the back of your neck and I assumed you were trouble. Flash forward a couple years down the road, I'm married, I'm living in Utah, I am at a working interview. So I've had a phone interview, I've had an in-person interview, I'm at my working interview. I am there at 6 a.m. and I'm there for about 15 minutes when the dentist pulls me aside and he says, yeah, I'm so sorry, but I have to send you home. Confused, I look at him and he explains that because the back of my neck had a tattoo that was visible, even just slightly, it would represent that I was not trustworthy, which would represent that he was not trustworthy, which would mean that he would lose patience and money if he were to hire me. So he immediately sent me home from my working interview after seeing me in person once before and deciding that talking to me and then meeting me and talking to me some more, I was good enough at least to consider for the position, until he saw the tattoo on the back of my neck and suddenly I was not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why in a church that focuses so much on the next life where we are in perfect bodies and perfect form, why are they so concerned about the women in particular looking like they want us to look?
Well, every time that people at school, like at BYU Idaho, and sometimes on my mission, noticed my tattoos, I would immediately be like, oh, I'm a convert, and I got them before I joined the church. Just like immediately, because there's like almost no excuse for like getting a tattoo as an active member.
And unless you didn't know better.
Act like you're still as good as everyone else when there's like a physical mark on you. So it was so much
safer to say, I got this tattoo before I joined the church, than to say, yeah, I got it when I was a member, so what? Because agency doesn't actually belong to you when you're a Mormon.
No, yeah.
All of the decisions are made for you.
Yeah. I mean, and even in the way that you respond to like this situation, I mean, there are certainly people who get more upset like in the name of the church. And I have also had interactions with senior missionaries from my mission. I don't know why it's always the senior missionaries, but like that have been more heated. But even in like the way he responded, it's just like, oh, but I know this about you. You know, it's like gentle and reassuring, and like it's written as if he was giving a talk, you know, like the physical manners in which you respond to things. All the love
bombing. Mm-hmm. And then he immediately scolds and shames you.
Mm-hmm.
And then tries to, like, fold in more love.
Yeah.
By saying, I'd love to keep in touch.
We sure love
you. I'd love to see you. I'd love for you to come to this mission reunion. Oh, by the way, will you walk 3 miles every day because I think you're fat? Love you!
And also, like, quickly going back to that, like, both him and his wife, I would say, are, like, plus-size people. So, like, what that like is so internalized that he's like, this young woman really needs to be exercising more, coming from me, like a 65-year-old man that's overweight. because God told me to. So then I start to address. I move into what he's waiting for, which is, after a lot of prayer, study, and counsel with friends in and out of the church, I decided to leave in 2019. And after finishing at BYU Idaho, I was able to stop attending church and remove my records in August of 2020. He didn't ask for this information, but I felt it necessary to, like, explain myself. It's the opposite of, oh yeah, I have tattoos, but I got them before I joined the church. It's, yeah, I left the church, but it's because I, like, did this research and I made this decision. And then I sat on that decision for a year.
I'm going to tell you anyway.
Mm-hmm. Because I have shared parts of this journey on social media and keep in touch with many of my mission companions and friends from the mission, I thought that you already knew this, and I'm sorry if it is a surprise to you. I understand it can be sad to see people you love leave a faith that you still believe in. And I wanted to include, but didn't. Similarly, it is sad to see so many people I love still participating in a religion that hurts people.
And even if that oppression is brought to their attention, they somehow find an excuse for it and feel safe enough to continue.
Because you don't see it until you see it. And we've talked about this before. It's like, once you see it,
it's brought literally to your face, it's like one of those things that you get as a child that you have to, like, put to your nose and then kind of, like, pull back so your eyes, like, hidden picture. You can, like, see. Yep.
Exactly. Once you see, like, the bunny playing baseball in the squiggles, you're like, that's a fucking bunny playing baseball. Yeah. And you can't see it, but at the same time. That is a
scarecrow.
That is a cult. At the same time, before you see it, you're like, it's just squiggles. Like, what are you talking about? It's just squiggles, and it can all be explained away with the prophets and the prayer and whatever. So I took out that line, although I wanted to include it. I'm doing very well and feel much better physically and mentally than I did while I was still in the church. You are right that my mission was very difficult for me. That sentence for me was very satisfying to type. This has just become like a therapy session for me to, like, share my grievances with my mission president. This is what the entire
podcast is.
But, like, him saying, I know you can do hard things because you finished your mission. Like we already talked about, like, there are so many reasons why I finished my mission. And yes, one of them is just that, like, I am a strong person and I can do hard
things. It's not like that rewarding, like, I wanted to run a marathon, so I, like, got all of my, like, running abilities up to the point where I could run a marathon. And then I went to the marathon, ran the marathon, and even though I wasn't first, I still crossed the finish line.
It's more like being in prison.
It's not like that.
It's like getting out of prison and having people be like, I know you can do hard things because you served in prison for 5 years. That's like, that was not my choice. Like, yes, I did it.
That wasn't the kind of rewarding challenge that I signed up for.
Exactly. You are right that my mission was very difficult for me. Along with doctrine, my missionary service taught me to stand for what is right. At this point in my life, the way the church has treated people of color, LGBTQ individuals, children, and many other marginalized groups is not okay with me and my personal beliefs. Because I was trying to reconcile my faith in the church and my personal morals, I ferociously studied the materials in Gospel Library. Capital G, capital L, Gospel Library.
Told them straight where to go.
Hoping to find truth, and instead found that the church wasn't what I once believed it was. Which, again, was me really trying to not be like, and found that the church is actually supportive of pedophiles, unapologetic for racism, continues to be bigots towards people who are in the LGBTQ community, doesn't care about the suicide rates of young people in the church or in the church community. But, like, as gratifying as it would be to say those things, it's like, what's the fucking point? Because as the same as him being like, you're a Sylvester of the Old Testament, like, it just hits it me mean and anything. Means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I am very happy with this decision, and I do not feel the need to study the Book of Mormon at this point in my life. But I have lots of love and respect for my many believing friends, and I hope that their faith brings them peace in the same way that leaving the church has brought me peace. If you want to call, this is my number. I'm free at this time. I'm sincerely glad that you are well. I was hoping to make it to the mission reunion this year, but was nervous to travel because of COVID, which is why I was surprised that it even happened, but it happened in Utah and Idaho, so I guess that makes sense. Hopefully next year I will attend and we can catch up. Enjoy the new year. And then he said, thanks for sharing. I was not aware, but certainly respect your agency and still love you the same. I would like to just visit and stay in touch with you. I'll try to give you a call later this evening or tomorrow.
Did he ever call?
Did not call. It's only been 2 days. It's only been that evening and tomorrow, so today would be like the third day. And Christ was risen on the third day, so maybe today's the day.
Jury's still out, folks.
Jury's still out. I guess that will be the sequel. No man
knoweth the day or the hour.
Except for him, because he received revelation
at a mission conference. Leaving the church is difficult, and learning to maintain relationships with people who are still in the church is difficult. And even if they're not necessarily someone that you're like actively trying to maintain a relationship with, you know, for example, I feel pretty comfortable saying this. I don't think they're ever going to watch the podcast, especially making it this far into an episode. But my husband and my mother-in-law had a pretty interesting discussion last week, and she told him that she scrolled across a More Than Mormon TikTok, like in the wild, like it came up on her For You page. And
that's kind of fun to know that it's just popping up.
As a little bit of a joke, we were like, what else was she watching to like make that come up in her algorithm?
Yeah.
Anyway, so
sometimes I follow a lot of like ex-Mormon and like
ex-evangelical. But every once in a while something comes up and you're like,
and I'm like, wait a minute, that's a missionary.
Yep. So she said,
which TikTok, you know, in was context, it? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Oh, I would love to.
I wasn't there for the conversation. I probably would have been like, ooh, which one was it?
Yeah.
But
because there's a really like our TikTok, go follow it. Lena makes it's 99% of our TikToks
pretty freaking funny.
Some of them are funny, and some of them are like, it's like the podcast. Some of them are more emotional. Some of them are just like random
rides.
So there's really like a full spectrum. Like she could have seen you dancing in your temple wear to like WAP.
Well, and so I don't know, because she said seeing that felt like I was passively mocking her and her beliefs.
That you were passively mocking your mother-in-law.
Like seeing me in this TikTok, whatever it was, whether it was a nice episode or a sassy TikTok, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so Isaac had to explain, like, I understand that it feels that way to you because that is your identity. Like everything made up of who you are has came from what the church has told you that you should be, a wife, a mother, you know, whatever. And he's like, for her, this is therapy. Because these things harmed her, and these things contributed to depression and anxiety and PTSD and a lot of struggle. And for her, this is a form of therapy. And that's what the podcast is her and her friend get up there and they just bullshit for an hour to 2 hours, and they compile it in a way that makes the most sense. And they put it up on YouTube. They don't make money off of it. They're not encouraging anybody to leave. They're certainly not getting on the podcast and you know, mocking anybody. We're not making fun of them. Like, I can't believe you believe this. What's wrong with you? I mean, sometimes we say that in like a, we believed it too kind of way, but it's not ever directly mocking anybody we love, anybody we served with, anybody in a previous ward, branch, or whatever that we've lived in, served in. It's just therapy. And it's really hard to figure out who you are when you're surrounded by all of these things reminding you of what you are not. And in the Mormon church, it's like you're either in it or you aren't. You're either all of it or you're none of it. And if you're somewhere in between and they can't comprehend that there is something called a gray area, cognitive dissonance and fear and fight or flight and like all of these things pop up out of nowhere. And so I think, yeah, I personally can admit, like, I can be an asshole. And sometimes I don't even care if I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
On the flip side, I think all of us are products of our conditioning. We can only, you know, we can only do with what we have. And I feel like you and I and people who are leaving the church and kind of dismantling their faith are, you know, now our conditioning is a little disheveled, and we're trying to kind of like rebuild that and figure out what it looks like now and reframe things. And so it's like so hard on both sides. It's difficult to be active and see someone you know and love leave. It's difficult to leave and be surrounded by people you know and love who are still heavy in the church. And it's sometimes the line gets crossed and blurred, whether on purpose or an accident, of the boundary of this is where I am in my faith or lack of faith. And being able to maintain a relationship in like a healthy way just because of how toxic the overall, you know, gloom and doom of, mm-hmm. you know, Mormonism.
Well, even having the podcast now, I'm very like proud of it. We like love it. We talk a lot about it. We care about this podcast and the very small community that listens to it.
And we do care about the impact it makes on people who listen.
We do.
You know?
And there is a part of me that's like, well, there are still, I think about like certain individuals in the church who are still active in the church where like, if they were to watch an episode of the podcast, like I might be embarrassed because I present myself in the podcast in a way that is like much more like honest and sincere to like how I am in the day to day, but it is drastically different.
And yeah,
it's so different than the way that I presented myself when I was like an active Mormon, even though I would, you know, if someone was like, hey, I saw you have this podcast, would it be okay if I listened to it? I would be like, yeah, go for it. Because there's nothing I've said in a podcast so far where I've been like, oh, I really shouldn't have said that, or I can't believe I said that, or I'm sorry I said that. Most of it is just like, wow, I'm really putting myself out there, and this is a really vulnerable thing to do.
And it's very hard to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
That actually just reminded me of something. Because there is like a fear of like, it's like multifaceted, because for me, like a big part of my brain is like, there's so many people who will relate and feel glad that they experienced something either almost the same or similar in a way, and they can feel less ashamed about their experience, how they acted, how they felt, whatever. But then there's also kind of a, not as big, but a fairly large piece of me that is like, what happens if people I love, like my mother-in-law, come across it unknowingly, you know, or maybe in attempt to support me, they go to it and I offend them. Yeah, I would be a little embarrassed. Yeah, I'd be a little like nervous of the outcome. But in, you know, at the end of the day, my goal is to just be happy with who I am. And that's literally with everything, whether my skin, my hair color, my eye color, my height, my weight, my intellectual ability. Like, I'm here to just be who I am and learn to love it and improve the things that I can improve and that I want to improve. And it's always kind of scary when someone does come across the podcast in the wild and they reach out to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna read this little email here. I work with a doula agency, shout out Heart Tones Birth, and the owner,
if you're gonna have a baby, contact Lena.
She sent me an email and the subject was your podcast. Ooh. Wow. And I was like, my stomach just fell to my butt. Excuse me while I go shit it out. And
that's so my worst nightmare. When I was interviewing for this job, my friends were like, oh, you should be like, you know, bring up your hobbies, bring up your, that you have a podcast. And I was like, I'm not going to bring up that I have a podcast. Like, if they find it, they find it. What can you do? But
yep.
Yeah.
So, shit. There's something.
So you got this email from Beth.
Hold on. There's something you said. Shit. There's
before? Something
you said that like sparked a memory.
About having sex.
Oh, that's what it was. Previously, after I had left the church and I was still like in the throes of trying to figure it out, and I was super active on Facebook, I had gotten into some sort of debate that turned into an argument with somebody, and it ended up getting to be complete bullshit to the point where I was just doing nothing but responding with like really sarcastic GIFs. Mm-hmm. And I responded with one from Orange is the New Black with the guy who has the porn mustache, and he says, "I want to fuck Jesus in his hand holes." So I posted that GIF.
That's a and very I really gross visual that image, but off. Yeah, I could see how that would upset.
And they figured out where I worked. They went to the website. They got my boss's information, took a screenshot of this GIF, and sent it to them about being so appalled. And they tried to put it as if they were like a client and that we had just lost a client. But my boss, knowing me pretty well by this point, all she had to do was just like go into our contact list and like see what the clients that we have in our system, and not a name, not a phone number, not an email matched this person. Anyway, so I was taken aside and just said like, "Hey, like, you're not in trouble, but there's people who are super pissed about things you do and say, and we don't, again, you're not in trouble, but like, you're basically one of the faces of this business, and we don't want anybody getting the wrong idea. Just be careful." So ever since then, I worry about when it's okay to share something, when I've overshared, especially in terms of like social justice, birth justice, because Utah is very conservative. And I had a very difficult time getting heavy into the birth work because, first of all, birth work is already kind of catty in its own, you know, right? But being in Utah with a bunch of like Mormon moms who... it gets really intense. Mm-hmm. So when I joined this doula agency, I was very like nervous to just be who I am, and just not say anything. But I had been observing enough to know that Beth, the owner, very inclusive, very calm, very logical, very like balanced. And so I felt fairly safe. But when I got this email and it said your podcast, I was like, well, I'm going to lose my job. She's going to fire me. She's going to tell me that this is not okay.
Well, and not that there's really anything that we say that we could actually be like fired from any job for, unless we like worked for the church. But it is still one of those things.
Or we were like doing something like that would like break HIPAA or something like that.
Yeah. But it's one of those things
it's just
where
that fear.
That,
like, especially in Utah, we're like.
Subject line, though.
You know, you're like, if they're Mormon, like they could take really big offense to that. So she wrote, "Ever since I found out from you that you have a podcast." Oh, so we had a little Zoom chat and my More Than Mormon podcast sign was up behind me. I forgot to take it down. And that's how she found out. And it's like, oh, and I just like pulled it off the wall. I'm like, ah. She's like, "I've occasionally been tuning in and I just finished listening to the most recent episode you did with your husband. All I can say is, wow. I just want to tell you how powerful it was to listen to your stories, and specifically the last third of the podcast where you both talked about your experiences beginning to become negative with the church and eventually finding the CES letter and leaving. I had to Google what the CES letter was and watch a YouTube video about it and to figure out what you were talking about." And for those of you who are not familiar with the CES letter and just don't care, it's a very long document. So to read it would take a lot of effort, so I don't blame her for not reading it.
I haven't read it. I've read like it's bits and pieces, but it's long,
it's
y'all.
A lot. I personally have no experience with church. I didn't as a kid, and I had very little as an adult, so I can't relate to the experience firsthand, but I teared up hearing about you sharing your pain and agony and the things you went through. Isaac sounds like an amazing person, and I hope I get to meet him one day. He is amazing.
He's great. We've already discussed. He's great.
Oh shit, my eyeball is watering, but I promise I'm not crying.
It's okay if you are crying. I'm feeling the spirit tingles and the goosebump arms, so the Holy Ghost is here.
It is here, I feel it. She said, "I had no idea that you had gone through infertility, had frozen embryos. I had no idea that you had a brain tumor. Wow, this is a lot. I have no expectation that you would ever share more detailed personal health info. But just know that I send you lots of love, tenderness, and healing thoughts in the hopes that your health remains stable and that you're able to navigate the choppy waters of infertility and a faith crisis with grace.
That is so nice. Thanks.
From a non-religious person who thinks that Utah is so weird and Mormons are quite strange, for your openness and honesty on your podcast.
That is so kind.
So that, for me, was kind of pivotal in like, okay, what I am in my fullness is worthy. And anybody who agrees with that can come along. Anybody who doesn't agree with that can back the fuck up. Because if anything, this whole entire journey has taught me, it's that I am worthy in and of my own self, like just as I come. And I don't need to prove that to anybody to be worthy. And the Mormon church is all about proving your worthiness again and again and again. And that's why it's so harmful and so dangerous, especially to people of color, LGBTQ people, single women. Like, it's ridiculous. And I'm really proud of our little podcast. Like, I'm proud that we put ourselves out there, despite knowing the kind of, like, pain and, like, unsuspecting triggers that could come about because of doing so. Because ultimately, like, it just feels better to just be who we are. The good, the bad, the ugly, the laughing, the crying, and back to laughing again.
Uh-huh.
Just like, it just feels better to be an authentic version of myself and to be able to improve myself without worries that someone on the outside is going to disagree with the method to my madness, so to speak. The only opinion that matters is your own.
Mm-hmm.
And the only person you're really competing with is, you know, are you a better version of yourself now than you were a couple years ago? Great. Then you're right on track.
And if you're not?
That's okay too. Because you know what? Sometimes we take some steps back.
Mm-hmm.
Life, that's, it is what that's it is. Just the beautiful rawness of being human.
Yeah.
That Mormons just really try and strip out of you. The natural man, we're supposed to fight that at all costs. So everything that makes us who we are feels like a struggle, and that is not how it should be. In wonderful fashion, we have gone so over.
You know, we say that, just know, but we've never set a time limit, so really.
Usually we say that it's like an hour.
Yeah.
However.
Our longest episode. If you want to,
our longest. We've also had a short episode, like the shortest one ever, that was less than 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However. If you are looking to give love to someone who does not have the capacity and the space to be themselves safely, go to Queer Meals.
Mm-hmm.
Make a donation.
Donate any amount. DM us a screenshot and you could win some More Than Mormon stickers and maybe other cool stuff. Who knows what we'll throw in there.
Who knows? At the time of this recording, 2022 has not arrived yet, but at the time you are watching / listening, it has arrived. So this little fundraiser will be going on until the end of the month. So It is not too late to make a donation. And hey, if you don't want the stickers, but you want to make a donation, go for it. You don't need to boast about it and tell us about the donation. Just go make the donation.
But if you like free shit, it doesn't hurt to send us a screenshot.
Which you
and
would
also
like.
If you don't win stickers, you can also buy stickers, and the information is on our Instagram.
Yes.
And we don't even make money from it. We're just like repaying what we spent to get the stickers. So like we just like stickers basically. And we like the LGBTQ people.
Mm-hmm.
And
we sure do.
In spite of all it's done, we like Utah and we want it to be a better place for people to live.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep,
donate, and then win.
Yep. All right, my friends,
we love you.
Until next time, we love you.
See you next time.
Bye bye.
Adios. We just keep saying goodbye. Keep going. Ciao.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Mormon podcast. If you made it this far, then you're definitely worthy to enter the Telestial Kingdom. Wait, is that the good one?